Welcome to Insight, live at noon with a rebroadcast at 7 p.m. It's official. The Sacramento Zoo will be making its way south to Elk Grove. Ahead on Insight, the city and the zoo join us about this long-awaited relocation and what it means for the community and animals alike, as well as the next steps. Also, a survivor of the October 7th Hamas attack has arrived in Sacramento and will be speaking tonight at the Folsom Community Center. The Chabad Jewish Community Center joins us with the message behind tonight's event. Finally, what started as more than 7,000 entrants across the country has been narrowed down to the top 45. The annual Tiny Desk Contest is coming to a close, and an artist who made the cut is from Sacramento. The Philharmonic joins us. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. That's all coming up today on Insight. From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. It's official. The Sacramento Zoo is heading south to the city of Elk Grove. The green light came last night with the Elk Grove City Council voting to move forward with construction after a five-hour-long meeting. That decision caps a long-running series of discussions and negotiations that stretches back years. This is a big step for the city of Elk Grove, but also for the zoo itself, which has been located in Sacramento's Land Park neighborhood for almost a century, dating back to 1927. And there is still a lot of work to do before animals are ready to move into their new home. Joining us now to talk about last night's decision and what comes next are Elk Grove Mayor Bobby Singh Allen and Jason Jacobs, the executive director of the Sacramento Zoo. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Thanks for having us here.
Well, I think the big question first, because that was a long meeting last night. How are you both feeling? Mayor Singh Allen, how are you feeling this afternoon?
You know, I'm exhausted because it was a long night and I had a hard time falling asleep because I was just so excited. My phone was buzzing late into the night, just not only congratulating the city, but just the overall enthusiasm and excitement centered around this project.
Yeah. How about you, Jason?
I can't believe it's real. I'm pitching myself. And I was hoping I'd see Mayor Singh Allen here today, but
yeah,
I didn't get
to
visit with her.
I've got those dark circles in my eyes.
I got about 3 hours sleep last night, and yeah. Just the adrenaline, the energy. This has been a long, just 2.5 years working with the city of Elk Grove that has been an incredible, incredible partner. Kudos to them. But really, the saga of trying to create a new home for the zoo has started, you know, when I got here in 2018. And decades before that, this has been bandied about for years. And so Elk Grove has got it done.
Mm-hmm. This moment, I can understand, is kind of surreal. Obviously, a lot of excitement, which is why it's hard to go to sleep after an event like last night's city council meeting. Because as you mentioned, Jason, this goes back several years. I mean, there's a long process and culmination that needed to happen to get to this moment. So just a quick recap for those who maybe are unfamiliar with the saga of the Sacramento Zoo. Why did you end up deciding to move from Sacramento to Elk Grove?
The quickest recap is that the zoo is landlocked. We're on 14.5 acres without any parking. Over the past 20 years, we have had to send many iconic animals away. Hippopotamus, grizzly bear, tiger, chimpanzees. Tigers and chimps have been in my tenure. You're stripping away the very fabric of what a zoo is. And we worked with the city of Sacramento to identify several sites. The sites were no longer available. And in April of 2021, the Sacramento Zoological Society's Board of Directors, we are a nonprofit, voted to allow me to try to find another partner. And the first partner, the first potential partner I called was the city of Elk Grove. And I can let Mayor Bobby Singh Allen take it from there with the rest of the story.
Yeah, go ahead, Mayor Singh Allen.
So when we got the initial contact over 2 years ago, obviously the council and staff were excited about this potential opportunity. We see this as a transformative project and a massive civic amenity, not only for the city of Elk Grove, but for the entire region. This is not just a win for my city, but it is a win for those amazing animals, and it's a win for the entire region. We need a modern zoo so that these species, these beautiful animals, can thrive. Because ultimately, it comes down to conservation and education as well.
Where exactly will the zoo be located in Elk Grove, Mayor Singh Allen?
Yeah, so right off of Highway 99, when you take the Camera Road exit, it's located near the casino. So for those that are familiar with the New Sky River Casino, it would just be further down the road on Camera, which ultimately will be connected to I-5 as well.
Jason, you mentioned that this is just shy of 15 acres currently in the Land Park neighborhood where the zoo is currently located. How much more acreage do you gain by moving to Elk Grove?
The new zoo would be 63 acres of a zoological park plus 10 acres of parking, which is parking is a major challenge at the current site, right? Not only will it be a larger zoo, it'll be more accessible to the public. It's a great location, as Mayor Singh Allen just mentioned. But we're going to have the opportunity to bring buses for school groups and let them just step off the bus into a special school group entrance, right? That's what the zoo's about. It's about the future generations who inherit the earth of tomorrow to make it a better place. And when we can show children and families something that they will never experience anywhere else, that's how you make change.
You also released some renderings of what the zoo could look like in the coming years. This is going to take a while. Paint us a picture of what this new space might look like. I mean, you're growing by more than four times the acreage that you currently have.
Right. The first phase would double the size of the current zoo, right? So the first phase is going to be about 30 acres and is really going to be focused on African grassland animals because we want to play to our strengths. And the new site, let's put it that way, doesn't have a lot of trees, right? So we're focused on grassland animals, and it's going to be a landscape immersion habitat where you're going to feel like you are sharing the same space as animals such as lions, giraffes, rhinoceros, cheetah, meerkat, antelope, gazelle, like you're on an African safari. Just like an African safari, you might have dinner at a safari lodge overlooking an African waterhole. We're going to create that experience in Elk Grove. It'll be the only experience like that in the region.
I think about when I was a kid, and this is decades ago, so I haven't been there since, but I'm thinking of the San Diego Wild Animal Park. Is it something similar to that? Do you have models of what you want this to look like?
Well, the San Diego Zoo Safari Park is 1,800 acres. This is much smaller, but we can, utilizing landscape immersion and clever landscaping, we can make an incredible walking experience for people to experience an African safari, you know, a walking safari, which is what a lot of people do in Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, where you're going to be able to see the animals at close range, still have intimate experiences, but the animals will have a much better quality of life. For instance, the giraffes are going to go into a habitat that is 10 times the size of the current zoo. And really, we are modeling this design off of some other very successful zoos, which Mayor Bobby Singh Allen, we got to travel to both Houston and Fresno. She could tell you about those experiences at those zoos.
What stands out to you about those zoos? Let's start with the one in Fresno. That's a neighbor close by.
Yeah. What was great about that zoo is that it does have the African safari experience right there, called the Great Savannah, and that is something that we're looking at emulating, but on a larger scale. But it's quite amazing when you see all of the species, as you would in the wild, congregating together and sharing this space. So the zoos of yesterday are gone. This is a modern zoo, and this is really about the habitat and seeing what they're like in nature. So you'll see this grass, you know, this amazing vast savanna with the rhinos and the zebras and other animals all occupying the same space. And what you won't see for a visitor, you won't see some of the separations necessarily. And so you'll see the lions, lurking about on the sides, and they'll be part of the landscape from our point of view. You'll be able to see them all in that same space, but there's clever ways of separating with lakes and other kinds of barriers where we won't see it when we look out. But what we'll see is the lions and the rhinos and the giraffes and zebras. It's an amazing experience. And it's something that I know my community is very excited about. I had overwhelming positive response since we began this journey over 2 years ago. So last night was the culmination of that hard work between the city of Elk Grove and the Sacramento Zoological Society. And we're proud of this historic moment and just sort of pausing and reflecting on something like this. There has not been a new zoo built in the United States in, I think, like 35 years. So we recognize the historical moment of this time and just proud to say that we're stepping up and meeting that moment and are able to provide such a tremendous amenity for the entire region to celebrate. And we're ready to welcome them in a few years.
Yeah, I mean, this is a new chapter marking, you know, potentially a new century for the zoo. The Sacramento Zoo has been in Lamb Park for close to 100 years. Elk Grove, of course, is located within Sacramento County, but you are your own city. And that city has grown and evolved considerably in the last 10 to 20 years. Mayor Singh Allen, why is now the right time to have something like this for Elk Grove?
Absolutely. So, you know, the city has been saving for a large project like this, for a serious civic amenity. And so we were in a very strong financial, we have a strong financial base to be able to even look at something like this. And so we're in that crossroads, if you will, with not only do we have a rapidly growing community, but also the community is family oriented. I raised my children here and I've lived here over 31 years, and one of the things that I hear from residents is having more family-friendly amenities. So I can't think of anything more family-friendly than an iconic zoo here in the city, but it's not just for children. It's for all ages alike to have these wonderful experiences. And like I said, this is that moment, not only as a growing city, but we were in a strong financial standing to even be able to consider something like this. So we're not putting, you know, this burden on our residents. We have a great financing plan. The zoo is going to be doing excellent work on their fundraising. This is a public-private partnership. So we're all in this journey together and looking forward to working together and getting this done.
Jason, this is also bittersweet for the city of Sacramento. The Sacramento Zoo has been in Land Park for close to a century. It'll probably mark that 100-year mark before you make that move to Elk Grove. And I know there are also people in Sacramento that are sad to see it leave. What message do you have for them?
Well, look, a lot of the feelings about the zoo are stoked into nostalgia, right? A lot of people grew up generations going to the zoo. And ultimately, I would say that if you care about wildlife, if you care about conservation, because the world will need good zoos more than ever in the next 25, 50 years to take care of animals right here in our own state, like Western pond turtles and other animals that need rescue and rehabilitation from wildfires, which we're going to plan on doing at the new zoo, but also iconic animals that people expect to see when you go to a zoo, like giraffes. We don't have the space to manage giraffes long term at the current site. We will in Elk Grove, and we're going to be much more accessible. We're going to have parking. We're going to be able to do a lot more for conservation, and we can do so much more for the region by being a zoo. When you benchmark our operation against zoos in similar metro populations, we should be doing 1 million visitors a year. We have the population to sustain it. We're going to add that attraction value, and I hate using the word attraction because we are a nonprofit with a mission. But I believe that depending on where you live, the drive might be a little longer, but it'll be worth the drive. I guarantee it.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jason Jacobs from the Sacramento Zoo and Elk Grove Mayor Bobby Singh Allen about the zoo's future relocation from Land Park, which was just approved by the Elk Grove City Council last night. Mayor Singh Allen, I want to get to financing because one of the major points that were discussed by concerns from last night is about financing. How will this construction be financed and what kind of checks and balances and oversight will there be?
Absolutely. So the city has identified four primary funding sources. 5% would come from developer impact fees. 31% would come from the City of Elk Grove Reserve Funds, which we've been saving since we became a city. And 26% would come from community partnerships, 38% from bond financing. So we're, you know, we have a solid financing plan, and it was supported by our city staff. that do, they're the experts that have, you know, that do the great work of putting this all together. So when we were presented with the financing plan, we've been able to review this step by step for several months now. This wasn't just unveiled yesterday. This has been an ongoing process and a very transparent process. We've included the community every step of the way when we started this journey. So we have a solid financing plan. I know we had some robust discussions on oversight and perhaps adding additional layers, but ultimately we're looking at having an oversight committee. We have a current oversight committee for our Measure E funds, which is our 1% sales tax that was implemented 2 years ago. So we're looking at perhaps having a comparable committee that is there on an advisory capacity. But ultimately, we have a sound financing plan with several checks and balances already built in. So we're very confident in moving forward. And that's why not only as mayor, but my council colleagues, the vast majority, the overwhelming majority supported the financing plan, and we gave an enthusiastic thumbs up to move forward.
Given that things like this, projects like this, are years long, you have the confidence that this could weather economic downturns?
I'm optimistic, let's say that. And we've seen different iterations of the economy, but we are factoring that in. This is not breaking ground tomorrow. So we're still several years out. So I'm optimistic, and I think, you know, because we have a great partnership, we're working together to make this happen. And so this is that transformative, exciting time in the city of Elk Grove that we are taking on an amazing project of this size.
So Jason, when can shovels be hitting the dirt?
Everybody's asking that.
That's obviously, I know that's a hard question to answer, but well, if with a hopeful guess.
Well, you know, here's the little secret. My responsibility is what's on the inside and helping design the zoo habitats, taking care of the animals and operating a zoo, which the Zoological Society can do quite well. It'll actually be the city of Elk Grove managing the construction of the project. So I delegate those questions to the city of Elk Grove.
I'm just going to give a ball. Maybe by the end of this decade, Mayor Singh-Allen, do you think we could have an opening date by then?
I'm very optimistic that, you know, I don't like to give dates and then not being able to meet them, but I know that this is a priority, and we're going to be working round the clock. And we'll not only on the fundraising, but all of the reports and the studies that we have to get done. I'm optimistic. Okay. It's 2024. I'm optimistic.
And you know, something I have to add, a lot of people, when they hear there's going to be a new zoo, they say, oh, well, I'll wait to visit the zoo. I'm going to go next year when the new one opens. And I'm like, no. As Mayor Singh-Allen can attest to, we have brought in a rhinoceros in the past year. He's 4,500 pounds. He's the largest resident of the entire county. His name is Jay Gregory. We have giraffes. We have okapi. We have a brand new lion, Slamson 2, in conjunction with the Sacramento Kings, right? We've got primates. We've got alligators, giant tortoise. There's plenty to see. And if you want to support the zoo, the best way to do it is become a member or buy a ticket and come visit with your family.
Will it still be called the Sacramento Zoo?
The other million-dollar question. We will have a robust, inclusive community engagement opportunity. But, you know, things like naming of the zoo, if someone were to come in and wanting to pay for, you know, for example, you know, millions upon millions of dollars, they would have naming rights, right? So we don't want to leave anything off the table. So this is going to be an inclusive process where we will engage the community on naming rights. And I think that's the most important statement that I can make. We don't want to just commit to a name, not knowing that, you know, how arenas are named in other areas. They're tremendous opportunities.
So it is a TBD. Mayor Singh-Allen and Jason, I hope you get some rest this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
It was a long evening. Bobby Singh-Allen is the mayor of Elk Grove, and Jason Jacobs is the executive director of the Sacramento Zoo. And we've been talking about the zoo's move from Land Park in the city of Sacramento to Elk Grove, which was just approved last night by the Elk Grove City Council. This will happen years from now, so you can still visit the zoo in the city of Sacramento. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It has been 7 months since the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel, and it is believed that more than 100 hostages remain captive. As negotiations for a ceasefire continue abroad amid ongoing protests here at home, many Jewish and Palestinian families are shouldering an enormous human toll of innocent lives. We have had conversations on Insight with Palestinian Americans who have lost loved ones in Gaza, as well as traveled there during the war to offer medical aid. And today we welcome a survivor of the October 7th attack by Hamas. Ilya Tarshansky lived in a kibbutz that borders Gaza. Hamas militants burned down his home, murdered his son, and kidnapped his daughter. In the months since, Ilya is sharing his story, and he will be speaking tonight at the Folsom Community Center at 7 p.m. The event is titled Be Strong and Resolute, and it is hosted by the Chabad Jewish Community Center in Folsom. Joining us now is Rabbi Yossi Grossbaum and Ilya Tarshansky. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Ilya, welcome to Sacramento. This is your story to share. Where would you like to begin?
Actually, it's very hard to go into the details of everything that happened on that day. But the aftermath, as you told already, I lost my son. On that day, the kids were with me. We lived separately with their mother. So on that Saturday, the kids were with me. And the aftermath of that attack, that my community, which is about 1,300 people, about 100 being killed, murdered, kidnapped, and among them my son. He had to be 16 on 24th of October. My daughter, at the time of attack, she was 13 years old. She was kidnapped, taken. It's not kidnapping, actually. She's taken hostages as a hostage. And she was held in Gaza for almost 2 months. That's the aftermath of the attack. And again, a settlement is a kibbutz. Kibbutz is like a small community. I consider it community as a family. I know everyone. Except maybe just newly born kids, children, and so I know everyone, and it's a big, although it's a big family, but it's still family, and it is hard to comprehend what happened there, and that on that day, and it's something that I'm trying to say and to tell people who don't believe on what happened on that day, or wants to kind of word for me who witnessed all these atrocities that happened there. So I've been here in the United States, in the California specifically, for a month already, and I met people, and this is what I came for, into Folsom, Sacramento, to talk to people.
When did you decide to come to the United States to publicly share your story? This is something you do not have to do, but this is something that you want to share with other people.
Yeah, right. So once it took time. For Gali, my daughter, my youngest one, to be released, and I wanted to go away for the time being, away from Israel, because it's very hard for me to be right now inside of the community. The community that still lives, and it just reminds me, it's just a reminder for me that I lost my son. Every time I speak with them, although right now I don't live in any community, because community actually been moved away from kibbutz, but even though, so they are not in kibbutz, they live right now in the area of Dead Sea. So for me, it's like right now, it's very painful to be in Israel right now, or to be around people I know. And I wanted to go away for the time being. And I have a friend of mine who also from Chabad organization, who told me that if you want to go, and I can arrange you a meetings, events with people where you can ask for help and share your story. So because again, you need to understand that I lost my, not only my house was burned, it's totally lost. And so I'm homeless and refugee inside of my country, inside of my Israel state. Yeah, and it's not only me, but people should know that it's above 100,000 people been displaced during this conflict right now. Northern part of Israel and the southern part of Israel, people displaced from their home. I lost my children, my child. I lost my home. I lost everything right now. And it's very hard to comprehend, to understand that and to feel it. And for me to share the story, it's again, so I'm asking for help from people, but again, also to, it's kind of a therapeutic experience for me to share it and not to be by myself, but at the same time, being surrounded by people that I don't really know, but do care. It gives me strength and power. Yeah.
I think I understand why the event is titled Be Strong and Resolute. What does that mean to you today? I mean, that can evolve over time, given what you and your family are navigating right now.
So, so for months before I came here, I was participating in all kind of discussions in the parliament of in Israel parliament, where they just like a Senate or something like that, and I heard stories of people who lost their relatives, and many of them are not able to function actually, physically, mentally. I feel like since Gali was kidnapped. So I had no choice but to act. It's like a feeling like my back against the wall, and that I had to act to bring her back. And that feeling that there's something been put on my shoulders without me choosing it. So life happens to you, and it forces you to act and to do something. And right now I feel people don't, not many people, especially here in the United States, people are so much away from what happened really. And of course they see TV and news, and they can come to quickly, can jump to conclusions what happened, but it's not so single-sided, in my estimation. So what I wanted to do is just to come over and talk to people, mm-hmm. and to tell them my story, the way I see it, the way it happened to me in my family.
How is your daughter, Gali, doing?
Yeah, so we were very happy that she stayed alive. She was released. There was an outline for the release of children. She, again, I need to remind the listeners that she became 14 in the end of March when she was taken hostage, she was 13. She spent almost two months in Gaza. Luckily for me, for us, and for her, she'd been treated good. She wasn't abused in any kind. But just being there, it's already like it is a big trauma. So when she came back, we were happy, very happy to get her back. So she's vital. She's open to the world still. She got back to school. She's studying. She plays volleyball. But she completely changed her environment. So she changed her school, her city, friends, volleyball team, everything new to her. But again, the children are much more resilient than parents, than the grown-ups, I think. And she definitely has some strength on her, and she's a fighter. But again, we're trying to provide everything that we could and we can for her. She has friends and family to support her, and she's good. She's good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Rabbi Yossi Grossbaum and Ilya Tarshansky, a survivor of the October 7th Hamas attack. And tonight, Ilya will be speaking to the community at the Folsom Community Center at 7 p.m. Rabbi Grossbaum, how did you come in contact with Ilya, and you are behind this event that's going to be happening tonight?
Yeah, so Ilya mentioned a friend of his in Israel who his wife actually is a reporter, and she shares a lot of the information that's going on in Israel, and I've been following her reports, and they put out information that he's going to be traveling to the U.S., so we jumped on the opportunity because, like Ilya mentioned, there's so much misunderstanding of what's actually going on. People are hearing things from third or fourth parties, and rarely are they hearing it from the first-hand experience. It's being filtered through opinion and filtered through misinformation. And hearing directly from a person that experienced it is very important, especially because a lot of the conversation that's going on right now is getting caught up in politics and other side issues in a way. And a lot of the narrative is being lost. The original, what caused all of this, where it all started, what was the beginning of this whole past 7 months. And it's important for people to remember that this was an unprovoked terrorist, intentional terrorist attack, or we could even say an act of war. It was an invasion of a sovereign state with targeting innocent civilians, not targeting military installations, which would still be an issue, but you know, we're talking about targeting children, families minding their own business on a Saturday morning on a holiday, Simchat Torah, the Jewish festival, when it should be a time of peace and celebration. Instead, they're being targeted for murder and for being taken hostage. And it's extremely important that people hear their original version from someone that actually experienced it. So we saw the opportunity. We did what we could to ensure that he should be able to come and visit over here. And we're glad that a lot of people have responded. And there's still an opportunity if people would like to join. The tickets are available until 5 p.m. today. So you can go to jewishfolsom.org/strong. And it's possible to get a ticket and come and hear Ilya's story directly from him.
We have a link as well on our Insight page, mm-hmm. too, if people are interested. You know, you are the rabbi of the Chabad community in Folsom. Can you tell us more about the Chabad community for people who are unaware?
Well, I could be here for a few hours. I don't know if we have enough time. Chabad is a Jewish outreach organization, but outreach doesn't really properly explain it because we don't reach out beyond the Jewish community. But we do try to encourage every Jew to explore their own heritage and understand what it means to be a Jew and how every Jew is able to get involved in their own Jewish heritage. So our focus really is on any Jewish person. There's no limitation on which particular Jewish person is able to participate. We don't exclude people based on their religious perspectives or political affiliation or anything of the sort. But our focus generally is on the local Jewish community. This occasion is opened more to the broader community as well as our local Jewish community because we feel it's important for people beyond the Jewish community to learn about it and to hear. And we take every opportunity we can to try and provide education opportunities. This is an example. We do other lectures that are open to the community. We have smaller courses and one-off classes. We do a lot of educational. Our focus is really on education.
What would you like people to know about tonight's event if they're just learning about it right now and they're interested in going?
It's a very confronting story. It's difficult to listen to.
And it's not age appropriate for younger people, correct?
I think parents should use their discretion, but I don't think younger children should come. It's not a pleasant experience, not a pleasant story. It's not a comfortable night. That's the truth. But it's a very important night. It's very important to hear. It's very important to be able to support Ilya, first of all, but also to hear what actually took place and to be able to know for yourself and to be able to share with others what really happened. So it's not a comfortable experience. It's not going to be, you know, I wouldn't say it's going to be a pleasant evening in some ways. I mean, the people that are coming are great people. Ilya is a wonderful person. You know, the space is comfortable, but it's a very confronting story, but it needs to be said.
So, excuse me. The content is raw and rough, yeah. But again, it's I'm myself a very gentle person, really. But the content that I'm speaking of and showing, it's rough and raw, yeah.
Well, Ilya and Rabbi Grossbaum, thank you so much for making the time. Ilya, I know you just landed in Sacramento.
Yeah, thank you.
Very much appreciate you stopping by here at the Insight Studio.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is Rabbi Yossi Grossbaum and Ilya Tarshansky, a survivor of the October 7th Hamas attack. Tonight, Ilya will be speaking at the Folsom Community Center at 7 p.m. The event is titled Be Strong and Resolute, and it is hosted by the Chabad Jewish Community Center in Folsom. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Inside on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. There is no doubt that NPR's Tiny Desk has become a bit of a juggernaut in the music world. Landing a gig at the famed desk has become a sign that you have made it for many musicians. That's probably one of the reasons the annual Tiny Desk contest is so popular. Artists at any level, they're able to submit a video performance of one of their songs for that chance to perform on Tiny Desk. And for the first time ever, the public radio audience gets to have a say. 45 artists were singled out of more than 7,000 entries this year across the country, and the audience was encouraged to vote for their favorite, including Sacramento's own The Philharmonic. Voting ended Monday, but as we wait for the results, we welcome Christian Gates, a.k.a. The Philharmonic, who joins us in studio today. You are one of the 45 out of more than 7,000. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's an exciting time.
It is. And I can completely understand why. We're going to listen to that song. You did a fabulous job. Let's start from the beginning. I know you've been to Insight before, but if people are just meeting you right now, where did the Philharmonic come from? What's the origin story?
When I was 23 years old, I was inspired by my grandfather's passing to really pursue music. becoming my own artist, becoming my own producer. Even though I had a very vast background in music, I wanted to expand on that through self-expression. And so I decided to say, I'm not going to do the regular 9-to-5 jobs anymore. I'm really going to pursue this.
When did you start, I guess, becoming a fan of Tiny Desk? What does it mean to you?
I became a fan of Tiny Desk when I first heard about it. Probably back in 2015 when Fantastic Negrito won it. And over the years, I got to learn more and more about the contest. And I saw all artists across America enter this contest in a way that was, there wasn't really a roadblock. All you had to do is bring yourself and bring your best. And for me, I felt like eventually I could do that. So my first submission was in 2018. And for 6 years, I felt like I didn't have anything to submit. And then this year, I was like, I have an idea.
And it was a great idea. I love the music video, and we'll talk about it. And we also have a link to it as well on our Insight page. For me as well, like my gateway to NPR was actually NPR Music. It was Tiny Desk or listening to modern music on NPR. And that's what led me into public radio. We're going to listen to your recent submission on Tiny Desk, but let's go back to the first time. I mean, what happened during that process? How do you reflect on the first time you submitted a video to Tiny Desk?
I was doing a lot of things in the dark, experimenting. I think I was watching a lot of the videos and I was looking at them. It was just behind a video. There really wasn't big production value behind it. It was just artists showing up as themselves in the rawest form possible. And so I did that with what I felt was representative of the message that I wanted to put out to the world. So I brought my friend, Ann Yes, who was a poet, and we focused.
He's been on Insight too.
Yeah. We focused on mental health awareness for that one. So we put a lot of posters. We did it at Soul Collective. We put a lot of posters around the room, set the piano up, and started to record. And I really wasn't aiming for like any wins back then. I just wanted to put my foot in the door.
Yeah, and create, you know, and experiment and enjoy it. So the song that you submitted is What's It All Mean? What's the message behind the song?
The message behind the song is sometimes in life, nothing makes sense. And it can become redundant. It can become meaningless at times. And, you know, I think it's okay for these things to be that way, especially if you remove like how you think life is supposed to be, because life will always bring us through its ups and downs and ebbs and flows that changes our perspective on what life means to us. And I feel like I was going through an existential crisis and didn't understand anything. And I feel like as I get older, I get more comfortable in myself, yet my perception of reality is I don't know, you know? So this song is really just a testament to that.
Yeah, and the I don't know is really profound. You know, I think that takes wisdom to get to that point as well. Well, let's take a listen to part of What's It All Mean?
So I don't go to hell. Oh, if it
I gotta say, this was the best start to my day today, was listening to your song.
Thank you.
It was wonderful. And I love the music video. I mean, you're talking about the 9 to 5. It is so creative how you came up with this video. It's like you're working in an office, your backup singers, your musicians, a lot of other people as well, extras. How did you come up with that concept?
When I was releasing my most recent album, Chironic, which was released back in July of 2023, I wanted to make this album roll out as big as possible. Throughout my years as a musician, I felt like what I was lacking was a brand and a story that took my talent to a level of, you know, perception that really just had a universal, timeless message. I felt like I was making a lot of great music and good music. But it was more of a showcase of my talent instead of an intention. And so I wanted to focus on intention. And so my friend Elwin and I and Devon Whitaker, who is the videographer and director in this video, and Elwin, who's the creative director, we sat down together and we planned it out, where it was like we brainstormed a lot of ideas. And, you know, we brainstormed through a few ideas. Some of them were like, eh. And then we came across this idea. And for some reason, this profoundly simple idea was something I looked over for years. And when I finally got the point, I said, this is what we're going to run with. And every video on my album is going to be around this guy in a suit. Everything I do is work, you know? And we made a music video, which was before this. I was already in the office. I was already in the suit. And I felt like I wanted to do something specifically for this contest that really encapsulated the concept. I felt like, you know, getting a good song out there is great, but I wanted to have my art transcend just the music itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it did. And it also took a community to make it happen. I mean, when watching the music video, I saw your mug is all city writers. Yeah. The Sacramento arts community is tight knit. And when reading your description of what it took to make this happen, that people showed up, and you really see that when we watch your music video, just the outpouring of community that turned up for you.
Yeah, and that for me was the most beautiful and humbling moment. I told everybody beforehand, like, I have not a single dollar to my name, but I have this huge vision that can make it really far if we all commit to it. I just need you guys to trust me. And there wasn't a single person within a 50-mile radius, I feel like, that was hesitant. They were like, let's go, let's do it, let's get ready to go, let's make this happen. And so it was the most important aspect of things, because this was a concept that was much larger than life and much larger than one person being able to fulfill it. And so I'm eternally grateful for everybody in Sacramento that came together to make this happen.
And I think it also just shows how much people care and love you, because not everyone only has 24 hours in a day, you know, and the fact that you didn't get a no means, you know, how much you mean to people. Finally, what happens next with Tiny Desk? When do you find out? Do you know? Are you in the dark, or do you have a little clue that you can share with us?
I mean, I'm having my fingers crossed at the moment. We're hoping and praying. I don't know what's going on currently at the moment. I know they just released the fan favorite and it was No Big Deal. So congrats to No Big Deal. And right now they haven't really announced the winner for it. So right now we're just waiting and crossing our fingers and being patient and making sure the anxiety doesn't overtake us.
I hope so too. And our fingers are crossed for you. The Philharmonic, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me.
That is Christian Gates, aka The Philharmonic, the only artist from Sacramento selected for the fan favorite vote as part of this year's Tiny Desk Contest from NPR, selected 45 out of more than 7,000 entrants across the country. And we're going to hear more of what it all means as we close our show. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to reach out to us, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Sarit Leshinsky and Jen Picard. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz. Our audio engineer is Steven Starbuck. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. And our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here Monday. Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.